What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Tyler Schlett. Welcome to another episode of All Quiet on the Second Front, the podcast where boring defense talk comes to die. We're going off script a little bit today, breaking the mold. Instead of having a podcast guest, we're going to actually cross-post an episode of GovExec TV, hosted by George Jackson. It was part of a National Academy of Public Administration AI Spotlight series. Focus on AI adoption and challenges inside the Department of Defense. Had CDAO and DARPA and AFRL in this conversation that I was fortunate to be a part of, and got to explore things like, you know, the track record of technology adoption in DoD, how to translate user experience into policy, how to sort of default to trust and positive intent and culture, and then really got to click into the difference in perception around the value of time. You know, there's the scene from Dune that our strategy is measured in centuries. I think sometimes to those of us on the outside that are shipping technology at the speed of commercial, it feels like that's how the Department of Defense might think about procurement or security or anything like that. This is a really cool conversation with folks in the department on building awareness and empathy on the speed of the environment that all of these different parties live in as we're trying to bring them together to create more mission outcome. So hope you guys enjoy. Have fun.
We defeated tyranny in two world wars and put a man on the moon. Now we want to apply American ingenuity to make our government work and work for all by addressing the grand challenges in public administration. In a world of complex global networks, technologies, and markets, no single government agency can fix government programs. These governance and management challenges can seem mundane, but they eat away at the roots of our democracy and society. America needs effective and collaborative approaches to help our government solve complicated problems and deliver better results. The National Academy of Public Administration, established in 1967 and chartered by Congress in 1984, will use our Grand Challenges campaign to bring public, nonprofit, private sector, and educational actors together to address the critical issues of protecting and advancing democracy, strengthening social and economic development, ensuring environmental sustainability, and managing technological changes. We expect our results to change lives in communities across America, and by doing so, to inspire new levels of trust in our government. Now is the time to take on big challenges. Together, we can help democracy flourish for the future. Join us at napawash.org.
Hello and welcome to Artificial Intelligence in the Public Sector, AI Spotlight Use Cases in the Department of Defense. The third episode in our second season, produced by GovExec TV in partnership with the National Academy of Public Administration. I'm your host, George Jackson. As we continue our series on AI and the public sector, we want to highlight some federal agencies, the role they play in the emerging AI landscape, and some of the ways AI is already being utilized in their day-to-day work and larger mission activities. Today, let's spotlight the Department of Defense. Let's kick things off with Jason Pricer. He is Director of the Mission Services Office at DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Sir, welcome.
Thank you.
Bonnie Evangelista is Acting Chief Digital and AI Officer for Acquisitions for the Department of Defense. Ma'am, welcome.
Thank you.
Tyler Sweat, CEO of Second Front Systems. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you. Thank you.
And back, glutton for punishment for a second season, the Chief Information Officer and Director of the Digital Capabilities Directorate at AFRL, Alexis Bunnell, NAPA Fellow. Welcome back.
I couldn't stay away, George.
So kick things off for us. Before we went on the air, you mentioned you want to avoid an intellectually lazy conversation around AI. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of really necessary and critical conversations around AI. So whether those are critical things like our intentionality around trust or ethics or any of those, but What really I get excited about, George, is how is this technology related to our mission, to our people? And what we're excited about at AFRL is really this idea that it introduces the ability for us to have a fundamentally different relationship with knowledge. And quite frankly, at the speed and the scale that we need to in this day and age. And so, you know, when I think about all of my work as CIO, but especially AI, this opportunity for my people to be more curious than ever, right? To be able to harness at speed more information than ever, you know, to be able to ask questions more naturally and kind of, you know, and come to the space and to the mission, you know, just with more curiosity. And to me, I look at it like what we really have to do now is, if we think about it from an adversarial context, we've got to ask and answer what if faster than the adversary, right? And so I really think that, you know, if we think about AI, we have the conversation around what's the relationship with knowledge we want to have, that becomes a much more interesting relationship and quite frankly, much more about the people, right? And the mission that I really care about.
Could you continue, Jason, to demystify artificial intelligence a bit? I mean, the conversation, to Alexis's point, has taken on kind of this mythical proportions aspect, and at its root, it's just math, right?
Well, so I think for DARPA, the main thing that we're focused on is increasing velocity through the process from ideation to getting performers or contractors on contract and doing that national security research. So the way we're looking at AI from a business process automation, AI and machine learning perspective, as well as leveraging large language models or small language models, is to where in that process or where in that critical path can we increase that velocity? So that's where we're holding kind of workshops with all the functional leads, whether it be contracting, comptroller's office, security, IT, all have a role in getting those performers doing that national security research. So as I think about AI, it's simply that, where and how can we leverage this new artificial intelligence tool that's out there, or whatever you call it, a knowledge base. It could be many different things to help increase that velocity, to increase our productivity and move things faster through that chain.
Bonnie, how do you look at that? Increasing velocity starts often with acquisition. One thing that you mentioned before we went on the air was that end user practices are very different in artificial intelligence. Could you connect those two elements? Like, let's increase velocity starting with acquisition, but how do you think about the end user while you're doing it?
Yeah, what I liked about what Alexis was saying was in her setting, which is what I would call a lab setting, where so the big thinkers like DARPA, they're trying to imagine the future, but I think now with AI, all of us are empowered to imagine the future. So every practitioner in any functional lane needs to have that space to have a different relationship with knowledge and imagine what would make my life better. How do I reduce friction? Or as Alexis likes to say, how do I reduce toil in my life and then go after, and then I need acquisitions or I need support to get after that. So the entire, everything AI is there to do has to be informed by the end user, the functional practitioner who at the end of the day has to do the job. Like that has to come first. That focus has to be there. I think a lot of us are trying to put that focus there. It requires a huge mindset shift though, because a lot of our systems are not built to or designed with the human design up front.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things I want to call out and just commend, you know, Jason and Bonnie on is, you know, really taking that technology to the person, right? How does this make my life easier? How does it make me more? So, you know, Jason's effort to kind of say, well, let's look at that individual level, you know, at the team level or the mission level or the practice level, but with people and say, no, really, like, how does it reduce toil? What would you like to be able to spend your time doing? And I actually think in many cases, we tend to lump all AI together, right? And the reality is that, you know, it may not be sexy, but I think the place that government is going to make the most headway is actually in that business process, right? In the administration, in the acquisition, because, you know, the relationship with knowledge there, that's the bread and butter of public service, really. And so there's going to be lots of incredible places. You know, we have autonomous wingmen, we have other places that, you know, operational impact of AI. But what I love is the fact that we're getting to this point now where it's really like, let's be realistic about what we do in government, and let's do it better, and let's empower our people. And most importantly, you know, one of my takeaways and why I'm so excited to hear the business case kind of get more glory is that, you know, my finding is that, you know, toil eats purpose faster than mission can rebuild it. And so, like, you know, anyone who's used a generative AI tool, there is joy, there is flow when you get to exercise curiosity, right? When you get to kind of nerd out on something, you know, to you know, for us, or to get to realize you didn't have to do something the hard way. And we should really revel in wanting our public servants to have those moments of joy, those moments of purpose back.
That's interesting because, again, mindset shift, where I think a lot of us, especially in the department, are used to being told what's good for us. Mm-hmm. And now we're asking you to tell us what's good for you. And that's huge shift, very exciting. That does create a lot of passion and empowerment, and that I think a lot of people are not used to.
Yeah.
My team has been used to it for a few years now because that was our mission. We had to go after this, but now we're trying to proliferate that in a way where other people can start to feel what Alexis is talking about.
Tyler, I'd like you to maybe personify this for us a little bit. I mean, I mentioned CEO, Second Front Systems. You have such a unique background to kind of move into that position. Talk a little bit about how you got there and how business processes that Alexis calls out right now are part of your portfolio or focus these days.
Yeah, I think there's two parts there that I'll try to sort of briefly touch on. And one, I think, is a synchronization challenge, right? Like, if you think the main difference between private sector and public sector, especially as your earlier stage or venture backed, is like the relative value of a minute, right? It is like the most valuable thing in my world is I find ways that I can buy back time to either make things go faster or make things take less time, right? And that is like embedded, hard-coded in the DNA corporately. You then look at the department that is still operating in like an industrial age approach where, you know, the system for requirements, one, is disaggregated from users. Mm-hmm. So I've got all of these different people. So it's somebody's job to take the requirement from the user to the slide maker, and then it's someone's job to take the slides to the slide reader. And by the time it gets up into JSIS, JROC, or all of this, we're on these 10-year acquisition cycles where the things we're talking about are happening in seconds, fractions of seconds. So there's a synchronization problem there. And then I think from a how do you think about speed and scale and resiliency and sort of like organizational lattices, but I think Jensen at NVIDIA is like a really good proxy. When you listen to him talk about leadership philosophy, it's all about removing information asymmetry. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I will give the same answer in the room with a college intern as my C-suite. And what that does is it just sucks the air out of toil. Because most of toil is imperfect information, maybe a little bit of like organizational politicking and jostling. And then if you just assume positive intent, they're taking imperfect information and trying to extrapolate that down. It's a relatively simple problem to solve. It is a massive cultural transformation.
And to follow that, I mean, you know, time is one of those things that we talk about, but I think to Tyler's point, we don't appreciate our relationship with it. And so coming into, you know, back into DoD, what I was struck by was, you know, what would it look like if we treated time like a weapons platform, right? Yeah. Like, what would it look like if a minute was as important to a missile to us? And I think one of the things that happens is that, you know, especially in times of peace, you know, we as people generally have maybe a low relation or low tolerance for risk. And so we fill those minutes. It's just an hour. It's just a form. It's just a training. It's just this and that. And right, starts to be more than the mission. And so I think, you know, for us at the Air Force Research Lab, the way I talk about it with my team, and I think AI is critical here, is how do we create wormholes, right? Meaning, if this is our current state and we want this to be our future state, how is it that we respect time, right? How is it that we wield it as a weapons platform? Because the interesting thing is, when conflict really happens, to Tyler's point, we're gonna throw all that out the window. Right, we've seen, like, you know, and even, you know, from a timely lens, you know, at this recent bridge collapse, I mean, the economy of this area, you know, and the tragedy of this is going to be, are we going to leave all of the government protocols and regulations in place, or does that bridge need to get back up, right? And so I think what's really interesting about AI and the relationship with knowledge at speed is, what does that allow us to do now, right? As we ask, what if faster, right? If we hear from people, what is different?
I'll give you a boring, to your point about like us getting the boring stuff right is gonna take us get to the wormholes like you're talking about. So my team, we started with that in mind. In hindsight, we didn't use that language, but we were trying to cheat time. Yeah. We were like, we would imagine things that people would say were seemingly impossible in a functional area like procurement and acquisition, and we started with procurement strategically because that is arguably one of the most critical or criticized parts of the process. And we said, how do we do a same day award? You know, like that. How do I award in hours or minutes? And again, maybe the goal wasn't to get there. The glory doesn't happen overnight. But then you start to reduce friction, you start to figure out where you have imperfect information in the process, like you were talking about. And maybe we didn't get to a same day award, but we got to a 30 day award or a 14 day award.
Which is a hallelujah.
I heard someone in the Air Force got an 8 day award. Like it, so it starts to build and build. And so the practitioner becomes the owner of the process rather than being, you know, maybe victim or subject to the process being, subjugated to them.
Well, if I can jump in and just kind of pull that thread a little bit more on the time continuum, because I think at DARPA it's unique that we make time the forcing function by, you know, putting, you know, every PM that comes to DARPA is on a 3 to 5 year term assignment. So they've got an expiration date on their badge that stares at them every time they clock in and out of the building every day. And so that drives a culture at DARPA, especially on all the mission services side of the house, where we kind of do all the enabling functions that creatively enable those PMs to get done what they need to get done. And so that's kind of our starting point, is a lot of the career staff aren't necessarily on term positions, but those PMs are, but we got to move at the speed of relevance to meet their demands. And so one example of kind of where we're applying that is, we've got a lot of, on my staff, a lot of professional security folks that are embedded with our PMs that do the horizontal protection mission in classifying our different levels of research, from the secret collateral or fundamental research level all the way up through special access programs. And so we're actually looking at, how do we apply an AI solution to how they identify critical program information across a data set of security classification guides across the department, and how they can do that much more quickly. But the important part of that is, it's flushed out a process. So we did it as kind of a pilot or experiment. But I think that process piece of where and how you engage the user, the subject matter experts in security, to build an AI, you know, tool that will actually, you know, make them go faster. And that's exactly what we're kind of doing with our kind of security classification guide process, where the security professionals who are sitting with the program managers figuring out at what level of this research does it need to be classified, they can now use large language models to, you know, scour the security classification guide databases, identify CPI, and then the model will actually generate a draft security classification guide. And then at the tail end, I think another important aspect of time is measuring how much time you saved. When you're talking about things in minutes, what's your key performance indicator that demonstrates that you're actually successful at leveraging that tool? Because it's not the end all be all for everything. And so as part of this, we're looking at, how do we engage those users and set up a process where we can look at it from early engagement with them on defining what and how we can improve, to measuring how well we did.
What's up, everybody? Taking a quick break from the action to remind you guys about our upcoming Offset Symposium, May 16th, the Waldorf Astoria in Washington, D.C. Digging into software-enabled statecraft this year. And we'll be talking to the Defense Modernization Caucus from Congress with Representatives Whitman and Ryan. We'll have the CTO of CENTCOM, the CTO of the Navy, a bunch of innovators, capital allocators, everybody in between. A litany of accredited software solutions that are at impact level 4, 5 and higher. For those of you maybe on the fence trying to think about going, we've created a special code for All Quiet listeners. When you go into secondfront.com/offset to get the registration link, you enter the code AQ2F, that is Alpha Quebec 2F. That'll get you a free ticket just for listeners of the show. Again, secondfront.com/offset. We'll get the link in the show notes. Excited to see everybody there. You definitely don't want to miss it. Let's get back to the action.
Right. Let's stay on this, Tyler. I mean, we've just heard two use cases in the Department of Defense. Would you like to call one out too, something that you're really proud of or think speaks to our conversation here?
I mean, I think there are a couple initiatives and conversations that I've seen recently that I think are really, really exciting. And I'll frame this with, when we talk about the challenges of AI adoption, I think it's important for us to think about that like in the same lens of the challenges of cloud adoption. Like, if we're gonna say cloud's adopted, like, everybody fought that. Like, a couple large organizations were able to drive that at least through. So the organization, the department, does not have a good track record with technological or conceptual adoption. Right? It transmits really well and says, we're interested in X or we're interested in Y. I think where we're seeing really interesting conversations start to take shape are around user experience, and user experience as it translates into policy. Right? The question that doesn't get asked is, as we walk across all of these giant placemats of process and reports and boards and all of this great governance, how, why, who, and bringing that down by persona, by journey, by step, there's a massive efficiency drill. And the conversations that need to get that started are happening now in louder pockets than they were. It's not a one-off in the corner here. It's not a one-off in the corner there. So that aspect gives me a bunch of hope for what sort of comes in the next cycle, department-wide, because that'll be a cultural transformation. And then the second one is sort of a mashup, and it's not just because she's sitting next to me, but right, if you'd 2 years ago been like, here's what Tradewinds is going to be doing from a procurement standpoint of emerging technology, like at scale, and the departmental embrace of it, nobody would have believed you. And if you told me 2 years ago that DIU was going to get an $800 million plus line in the NDAA, nobody would have believed you, right? Because that's an ability for us to deploy capital and remove friction from procurement pathways specifically targeted at new and emerging capabilities, technologies, and providers that is actual progress and meat. It's not just words, and it's not just sort of like billboards of, hey, you know, come send us your new technology. They're putting muscle behind it. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, to follow that, I think, you know, one of the things that I hear you saying, Tyler, is it's also about people, right? Oh, yeah. It's about, you know, and all great public service and great governance is ultimately about people who are like, that can be better. That should be better, right? And you start to see that manifest, and it becomes more believable, right? That it can be better, it can be different. You know, but to follow maybe both, you know, Tyler and Jason, you know, I think one of the things that I call it is, like, you know, if we think about time as a weapons platform and we think about that intentionality and we kind of think about never being satisfied, how can it be better? Mm-hmm. You know, then Jason calling out, like, really, what is that toil calculation, right? What does it cost me to, you know, to add another step to the RMF process? And what does it gain me to take it away, right? And I think what's really interesting is the opportunity we have right now, because of the speed and the information that, like, AI can put at our fingertips, we have to kind of realize we're trading in attention. Like, attention is literally the currency of the modern world, right? There's a reason, you know, for me coming from Google, there's a reason you become a nation state actor, right, when you are dealing with attention. And that's going to be true and continue to be true in national security and normal economics. But I think, you know, for we as public servants, when you see these types of leaders saying, okay, you know, what does it cost us to not do something? Or what might it give back, you know, to our people to do it in this way? And I think that what I'm hoping to continue to see more of is not just, because it also helps us, I think, make investment differently, right? It's one thing to say you should be doing some AI. It's another to say, I'm gonna get 5,000 hours back to my procurement people. And guess what? That's worth X to me. And I think that intentional calculation is where we're starting, you know, to get to. But even more so, I think we have to recognize, and this is true for most of us in innovation, that, you know, doing nothing is also a risk, right? A lot of times when we try to make the case, there's this assumption that how we do things now isn't risky. And I think that, you know, to that idea of where do we need to be? And a lot of us don't even know. Like, I cannot tell you 6 years from now what the technology is gonna be or what the adversarial context we're gonna be looking for. Kudos to anyone who thinks they can, right? But we have to have that curiosity, but we also have to say, well, what's it going to cost us? You know, what is beneficial? And I think what we find when you break down that math is it actually becomes a lot less anxiety creating. It's like, well, you know what? 5,000 hours of procurement time back is not only worth X as far as the salary calculation, but it's worth Y as far as getting things faster, right? Making, you know, making decisions and moving. And so I think, you know, I'd like to hope, or I'm predicting that, you know, if you just see the leaders that are represented here, that intentionality is starting to come into play. And I think, you know, that opportunity for AI to let us have a different intentionality, to let us understand more about the why we're making these investments is really the era that I think we're entering.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to introduce something that you said before the cameras started rolling, because I think it speaks to exactly what Alexis is talking about here around people asking the right questions, using AI as a vehicle to identify gaps that you need to address. Could you talk a little bit about how you or how your team query?
Right now, learning is done in a couple different ways. And I'm going to speak to my functional lane, but I would imagine it looks very similar in most functional lanes. You either have an institution that provides content and you learn from the institution, or you have experiential learning. On the job training, you are put in situations based on your mission where you have to figure things out. Myself and a lot of others on my team have gotten to the point where we're at because of experiential learning. What we're trying to offer, and this goes back to where you started, having a relationship with knowledge. Alexis had an interesting concept where we have to have this, or we have this need to know what's behind the tech or behind the black box, but we should consider ourselves as a black box. No one understands how we as a human thinks, and no one understands how I make decision A or B. But with tools like AI, you can get some exposure and understand from a knowledge management perspective where people's knowledge gaps are. So in terms of change management or upskilling people into a lot of the things that we're talking about, because that is also key to this transformation that Tyler talked about, is you can't just throw the tool out there and expect people to use it because you think it's a good idea. The user experience matters, but also making sure people understand, if I'm expected to be querying in order to have a relationship with knowledge, do I understand how that works? And is there new friction? Because I have to learn a new skill, essentially. I have to trade in old skills for new skills. And there's I have lots of opinions on this, because some of the criticisms are AI is going to make you stupid. And I would argue that's not quite the case. It means we're exercising different parts of our brain and we have to think differently, potentially. So all of this color and context to say, as an example, if you have a tool that you can query a knowledge set, but now you have a way of tracking and understanding where people's gaps are because you know what they're asking. Mm-hmm. And so now you can provide content, or you can address areas where you would like to see different actions or behaviors because of the different type of questions people are querying. We can track that now. We know that it's transparent. We've talked about this.
Jason, as I look around this group and the past guests that we've had on this series, you know, titles are changing. There's a lot of digital, there's a lot of data, there's a lot of AI in the titles that I'm seeing for very senior Department of Defense leaders. Connect those dots for me, because data is really something we haven't called out specifically thus far, but it's central to this conversation as well. How do you use it? Where are the gaps? How do you interpret it?
Yeah, so I think from a DARPA perspective, when we're looking at, you know, business process innovation, I think the data is still in its infancy, and we're trying to look at what data is available. So the example I gave before, that was leveraging an existing database. So it was already a curated data that we could easily, fairly easily apply large language models to really make that a more robust database and tool for our professional security staff. So I think we're still learning as to what kind of expertise we need and where we need to place that within our organization. So DARPA is very small. It's only about 240 government folks. So that gives us an advantage that we can be very agile and nimble as to how we approach data. But I think that's one thing we're going to have to really analyze over time is what data sets are we going to need to use and how much curation is required to make that useful. So we're still kind of formulating what that governance structure looks like, what those positions look like. Do we need the data analytics persons? Do we need the AI? Do we need the process automation AI type folks? And we're just starting kind of new programs, if you will, for kind of developing those subject matter experts from kind of the ground up. So DARPA really never had internships, if you will. So we're actually looking at leveraging kind of different scholars programs to bring in business process automation AI folks that are just recent kind of master's graduates to start to develop those skill sets from the ground up and really embed them, like I said before, with those subject matter experts across the functional areas and figuring out where we can tease out these process efficiencies and to save us time going forward.
That's so cool. I mean, I think one of the things that it also makes me think about is, you know, oftentimes, you know, people ask me a lot, oh, you're a woman in tech, right? There's not as many of you as there should be and things like that. And I think generative AI is a really interesting moment for us. So, you know, you asked kind of Bonnie about querying and Jason's point about kind of interns and bringing in new folks. And one of the things that I always try to look at is what is the human experience? And you know, recently I've been playing around a little bit with seeing the quality of the queriers, right? And everyone assumes, I mean, it's called prompt engineering. So everyone assumes that, you know, you've got to be a coder, yeah, new term, prompt engineering, and that you've got to be, you know, a coder or a data scientist. You have to have that, and that's what you've got to do to be good. And quite frankly, what I'm finding is that the lawyers are phenomenal. The PR people are phenomenal because words, you know, words and thinking conceptually in words and natural language is their natural state, right? And so I think what it's really introducing for me, a lot of people don't know, I'm a PR and advertising major. How did I end up being the CIO, right, of AFRL? But I think it's this magical moment where everyone is relevant to knowledge, right? And as you introduce a tool that makes it more accessible for someone to exercise, you know, their expression, not in code, but in words, what an amazing, you know, kind of power, you know, secondary power, third power, you know, to be able to bring more people into, you know, being part of this digital leadership, right? And digital public servant. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see what does, you know, 10 years from now, like what is actually, who's considered a technologist, right? And, you know, based on this technology becoming easier and really, quite frankly, more inclusive. I think the other element on the data side that is really interesting is I think we're having a moment, there's a, you know, Alexis's opinion of like data identity. And what I mean by that is that typically our relationship with knowledge and data in government has always been one of control. Right, I've got to perfectly clean it and structure it and organize it. You know, it's got to be 100%. And I actually think for many data officers, there's a lot of anxiety rolled up in that perfection, right? And kind of, is it good data? Is it not good data? And so I think it's actually, we should recognize that it's a change for us to say, well, what is it to put all the data on the table, right? To actually unlock all of our treasure, structured or unstructured. And what does it mean then for us to shift our mentality that to make choices? Meaning for some things, you know, if we're doing an audit, we probably want 2 + 2 = 4. But if we're gonna ask big what if questions, I don't just want the controlled information. That's not enough of our knowledge treasure, right, for me to do the best of my job. So I say that because I think there's a, you know, for myself as a, you know, as a data lover, there's an identity like crisis of me being able to need to move from having a controlled relationship with data to a curiosity or catalytic relationship with data. And I think we shouldn't discount the change we're asking people to do in their values and in their mindsets as they exercise that.
I'd like to close, Tyler, with you, but before I do, I'm going to have our audience just triple down on that term. Prompt engineering. Maybe there's a little graphic that can pop up underneath here. Tyler, we've kind of danced around this thematically, you know, velocity, this culture clash, or use a different term, between DoD and Silicon Valley, speeding up the acquisition process. Leave us with one nugget of wisdom to sort of improve that aspect of things. What should DoD leaders in artificial intelligence do right now to kind of reach those larger goals?
It's a really good question. I think my my parting sort of advice would be DoD needs to impart some opinionation on how they want industry to come. And I don't mean, hey, come to this innovation office or this, but at a technical and the relationship between departmental data and infrastructure and commercial software, what does that mean for data access? What does that mean for intellectual property? What does that mean for derivative products, especially as we're talking about models and ensembles and how they actually behave in the wild? There's an opportunity for the department to extend that opinionation that will create technical guardrails for industry to come in and meet the department how it wants to be met versus the way it's happening now, which is more of a, there's 70 different policies that are all in conflict with each other and you get different answers based on who you ask questions to. That's a really difficult sort of terrain to navigate as a private company. So that would be my kind of parting gift to the department.
Tyler Sweat, CEO of Second Front Systems. Jason Pricer, Director of Mission Services Office at DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. Bonnie Evangelista, Acting Chief Digital and AI Officer for Acquisitions at DoD. And my esteemed co-host, Alexis Bunnell, over at Air Force Research Laboratory. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
Thank you
very much.
And thank you, our audience, for tuning in. I hope you're as excited as I am to continue exploring AI in the public sector. Until next week, I'm GovExec TV's George Jackson. Have a great day.